Hey, everybody. We're back with another episode of Give Us the Launch Codes. I'm Tom.
I'm Travis.
I started playing a little bit more video games now because I'm getting up earlier again.
Okay.
So I've been playing some video games, watching some TV. What have I watched recently? Oh, yeah. Blazing the Monster Machine.
Oh, that's the kid show.
Yeah.
That your kid watches.
Yeah, that my oldest watches. He likes it. He likes Blazing the Monster Machine.
It looks like a cheap-ass version of Cars.
That's what it is. But you get sucked in because I like the character Pickles. He's literally a pickle car. Like, it's kind of cool. I don't care actually about Blaze at all. I like Pickles. Pickles and Crusher are my jam. It's fun.
I got into a mood this past week where I'm like, I just want to look. I was looking for something new or something I hadn't watched in like a while. And I was like, I don't want anything complicated. I'm just going to watch Bones.
Oh, how is Bones? I've never watched it.
Bones is like, what if, like, CSI, but the characters had personality.
Ouch. I like that.
Because what if CSI, but the characters were memorable? Because, you know, at least what you have is, like, you know, this hot will they or won't they couple at the center.
She's gorgeous.
She's gorgeous.
She's
and
so
David
good.
Boreanaz is, like, you know, a charismatic hunk. Always has been.
She always, the lead for Bones always reminds me of the female redhead cop from The Shield. Like, they're just gorgeous women.
But if she was, like an autistic character that was, like, left out of The Big Bang Theory.
And also wasn't doing shady shit on the job. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And wasn't doing shady shit.
Like, that's the thing. I'm watching the show. I'm like, holy fuck, Dr. Brennan is autistic. They won't say it, but goddamn.
Is it more than Hank with his grass and his lawn?
Oh, way more. Oh, my God. No, yeah, no. She's all, because she's like, she doesn't get pop culture references. Like, very obvious ones, too.
Oh, she's just so over it.
She's in her work. She doesn't have, like, social filters, which can lead her into social faux pas. And you know.
You know what I say when it comes to that, when you can't get any of those pop culture references, Travis? You know what I say? Yeah. F-U-C-K-I-T, motherfucker! It's time to fuck it!
Fuck it! We did the fuck it once and we haven't done it again. We've been avoiding it.
It's been almost, I think, it feels like it's been 20 episodes actually, right? It's coming up almost.
Pretty much.
Was it episode 6 was our first fuck it?
I thought it was 5.
Oh my, so
or was it 4? I don't remember. We have held off long enough.
It might have been 5.
It's, yeah, the world sucks.
The news is just too hard to ignore.
The big butt-ass bill was signed. We thought we were doing War on Terror in Iran, but I guess we're not doing that.
Because we know it's going to be something else. So let's just wait a little bit because unfortunately, like, some missing girls are missing in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Dude, my...
So we got a big catch-up soon coming up.
My brother-in-law, one of them.
How many brother-in-laws do you have?
This one's married to my sister. So, like, he's actually from... His family was from that... Used to live in that area. And he actually, like, they've lost some people.
Holy
like,
fuck.
Like, there's some people that they knew that passed.
So you're saying we got a big month catch-up thing.
It's, yeah.
That's going to be a big episode coming up?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to make light out of that just because, like, it's, you know, it's personal. But, yeah, it's really devastating. And there's a lot of questions that need to be asked about, like, why weren't they warned? Why wasn't there any warning? Why was that whole town swept up to where there's, like, a summer camp going on while it was happening, and now we got missing children? I mean, but we'll get to that in good time.
So let's fuck it.
Let's fuck it. All right. I'll do my fuck it then. I'll start this. 'Twas the dawn of the golden age of science fiction television, 6 years into the Star Trek renaissance. J. Michael Straczynski had a dream given form. His goal was to revolutionize the genre with something resembling that of an epic novel. It was a watershed moment for the silver screen for character development, long-form storytelling, and digital effects. An unprecedented epic told over 5 seasons of 110 episodes and 4 television movies. It may seem cheap and dated today, but it is certainly more than the sum of its parts. This is Straczynski's magnum opus. The year was 1993. The name of the show is Babylon 5. In my opinion, it's up there with Twin Peaks as being a pioneer of drama storytelling, except because it has spaceships in it, people don't talk about it as much as they talk about Twin Peaks. So yeah, it went from 1993 to 1999. It's a 5-season. I want to say it was like the first TV show where everything was planned out front to back. And I would say it did it better than most TV shows attempting to do the same since have. It was the brainchild of J. Michael Straczynski. J. Michael Straczynski, some things you might know, he wrote the screenplay to the Angelina Jolie film Changeling.
That's it? Okay.
Yeah, he wrote that, directed by Clint Eastwood. He is credited for the story of the very first Thor movie that Marvel made, and he wrote some Thor comics. He co-created and wrote the Netflix cult classic Sense8, along with the Wachowskis. And if you're a comic book fan, he's probably best known for one of the best runs on Amazing Spider-Man, even though it ended with the One More Day storyline, but that was more Marvel than him. So in the 90s, he created a show that was kind of like, in some ways, it was kind of like Game of Thrones in space, except it came out a few years before George R. R. Martin published the first novel. but just this, you know, this big epic with multiple factions and kind of, you know, moral relativism and grappling with that, except it had kind of that kitschy Star Trek veneer to it. The backstory is kind of like, imagine if, like, when the Covenant invaded, were about to invade Earth and Halo, but then suddenly the Covenant were like, actually, never mind, we saw the error of our ways and we put our hands up for mysterious reasons that we have yet to reveal. And that's kind of the backstory of Babylon 5, because afterwards the humans are like, okay, we need to build a space station in like the middle of neutral space that can maybe become like the UN of space someday. And we need to, like, you know, where everybody could, like, all the alien nations of the galaxy can come together and we can resolve our differences to a point where we don't have another horrible war like that again. And that was Babylon 5. That is what that station is. And throughout the 5-season run of the show, it's kind of like with Sauron or the White Walkers, or I think the Reapers Mass Effect took a lot of inspiration from this, where there is this like eldritch evil resurfacing that's kind of stirring the pot and causing conflict in the galaxy to rise again for resuming this cycle of conflict between like ancient races, and us younger races are kind of caught in the middle of all of that. And that's kind of what the big epic of Babylon 5, that's like the broader storyline of Babylon 5.
Seems like every big epic of either sci-fi or just fantasy involves an ancient evil resurfacing from the depths.
I think they took a lot of Tolkien. We owe a lot to Tolkien for that. And Babylon 5 certainly takes influences from Tolkien. Like, you know, I think the Mimbari race are clearly like the elves, you know.
Oh, okay.
In terms of actors that were in it that you might recognize, Claudia Christian. I know she was on the show 911.
Oh, okay.
Because I saw an earlier, and I want to say she was like the police chief or something. A high-ranking police officer on that show.
I think I know who you're talking
about.
The
lead, at least from the second season onward, the guy who's running the station is played by Brooks Boxleitner. You might know him as Tron from Tron.
Yeah, from Tron.
Or Alan Brady, who was like his human counterpart, but it's that actor.
Wait, oh, the one who was like, you know, finish the game. No! That, yeah. I love that scene. It's so, like, I love when he does that. No!
One thing that like makes the show kind of fun to watch is that it was the first show to just go all in on computer graphics when like every other thing with space was using models. Star Trek was still using models at the time. But Babylon 5 did not have Star Trek money, so they're like, we're going to go all in on this nascent art of computer-generated imagery. And they took full advantage of that where, like, the space station was spinning. And you couldn't really do that with models.
Oh, shoot. It was, like, actual spinning?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, because it was, like, you know, centrifugal force gravity because the humans had not figured out how to do artificial gravity yet. And then a lot of the alien spaceships were, like, very, very alien in design. Some of them had, like, moving parts, like cannons and stuff that you could actually see, like, on the full body of the ship.
Okay.
So, like, you couldn't do that stuff with models.
No.
So they took full advantage of that, but as a result, the visual effects look like early PS2 graphics with a high frame rate. And so the effects have aged laughably. But to me, that adds to the charm of the show, where...
well, if you know what year it was made, you can have that mindset.
Yeah, where you can look at it and you go, aww, like, they were really going for something. I get it. That's adorable. You know, good try. and I would never, ever want to see, like, a remastered version of the show where they do the effects good.
Or they reboot it.
Well, Straczynski almost...
He almost did?
He was working on a reboot, and it was going to be on the CW, but it was around that time when the CW was, like, bought out by Nexstar, and Nexstar was like, we want nothing to do with this. So that reboot kind of died.
Okay.
Got aborted, but like the same writer. And that is another thing. Like, Straczynski didn't just plan it all out. He wrote most of the episodes. He was doing the Taylor Sheridan thing, but better than Taylor Sheridan, where he wrote most of the episodes of the series himself. But he only really did that because in his mind it was like, okay, this storyline's getting too complicated that I kind of have to just write this myself. It's kind
of
hard to tell other writers what to do.
Oh, and
I just do it myself. And you know, he could write very fast. He's like the kind of guy that doesn't believe in writer's block because in his mind, he's just letting the characters talk.
Also, too, like every season came out every year after every year, right?
Yeah,
so
22 episodes,
like, you know,
a year.
2 years after, 1 year after, 3 years after production hall, like Yellowstone went through all that bullshit.
No, yeah, it was 22 episodes a season, and they
just came out every year.
Yeah,
boom, 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 boom.
That's what you were expected to do back then.
That's what I expect him to do now. Still,
yeah,
I have to wait still till next year for Fallout again.
Yeah.
God knows when House of the Dragon season 3 is coming.
Yeah. So and when you watch the show, of course, when you watch the first season, it has kind of that episodic Star Trek feel. It's a nice slow burn.
Okay.
Which, you know, you might find kind of like lame or boring at first, but if you keep watching it, you're gonna notice little hints of bigger things to come, and it's not like with typical television doing, like, what J.J. Abrams calls mystery box storytelling, where we'll just throw out an unanswered question and be like, we don't know what that is. We're going to figure it out later. No, Straczynski knew exactly where that shit was going, and you knew that the writer was in full control when you, like, watch a random episode a season later, and it answers, without warning, answers a question that you've been having in your head, and it makes perfect sense. But yeah, so he, you know, he did mystery box storytelling before J.J. Abrams ever had a career, let alone coined the term, and way better than J.J. Abrams ever did in his career. Because here's the thing, he knew what was inside the damn box. Whereas Abrams prides himself on, like, well, I don't want to ever know what's in the box. It makes it interesting to me.
I want to be Brad Pitt forever.
What's in the box? What's in the fucking box?
There you go. You got the joke.
I was wondering when we were going to get a 7 reference in there. Just brilliant. And yeah, and then without even realizing it, the show goes from, like, an episodic, you know, lame Star Trek ripoff to, like, this super epic that... you know, that keeps you glued to the screen in the way that what we now call bingeable television. Highly serialized, but telling, like, a finite epic. He had this shit planned out so much that he had trap doors figured out for if actors suddenly had to leave.
Oh, cool.
And which happened in the first season, his lead actor had to go because he was dealing with, like, schizophrenia problems. He had to leave because of mental health issues. Not only did they write that the original lead character out of the show, they had to bring in the new lead character played by Tron, but then eventually, like, when that original actor got a little better with his treatment, they brought him back for a couple guest appearances and then wrote him out of the show in such a seamless way that tied back to some, like, really deep lore in the series where you can, like, watch the show from the beginning and it makes perfect sense. You would thought that that exit was planned, but it wasn't. You knew that universe front to back that he could seamlessly put that in there. He's a genius. He's my favorite TV writer. He's, like, I think maybe one of the best TV writers ever in American history. And it's a shame he doesn't have more shows under his belt because he's a genius. He's in a genius that, you know, that other TV writers today that are more paid and more successful wish they were. Yeah, and just a lot of action, a lot of intense drama. Something that about that show that I think would be very resonant today, in that show's future, which is like mid-23rd century.
Okay.
Unlike Star Trek, which Gene Roddenberry insisted that by that future, humanity figured everything out. We solved all our problems. There's no crime, there's no hunger, there's no racism. United Earth. In Babylon 5, we did the United Earth thing, but we still got our issues. And in that show, they depict that Earth is kind of is going through what we're really going through right now. We got a new president who plots an authoritarian fascist kind of takeover of, in this case, the whole planet, as well as a lot of Earth colonies, witch hunts, curtailing of civil rights and human rights, and that eventually explodes into like a big, you know, civil war where, like, you know, the renegade human colonies rebel against Earth, and a lot of the, like, you know, fascist subtext of the, you know, antagonistic human government resonates way more than it should. It's one of those things where it's like, I wish this storyline didn't age as well as it did.
Like, damn you, your good writing.
God, it, like, you know, I mean, and of course, you know, Straczynski was thinking about, like, kind of looking back at Nazi Germany and stuff like that. They even have, like, a secret police force on that show called the Night's Watch that wear fucking armbands.
The Night's Watch.
The Night's Watch, yeah. And, that's basically, like, a Gestapo-type force. And, very xenophobic as well. So they didn't like the other aliens. They were, like, all about Earth first, as they said on the show.
We don't serve your kind here. You go in through the back.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff. And yeah. So that's another thing to watch. Like, if you're looking, if you're looking for a television show that kind of answers today's moment, Babylon 5 did it way back in the mid 90s.
I only know Babylon 5 from Big Bang Theory because Sheldon Cooper brought it up a lot.
After you finished breakfast, I thought we could spend the day watching the final season of Babylon 5 with director commentary.
You hate Babylon 5.
I do. It fails as drama, science fiction, and it's hopelessly derivative.
Yeah, Sheldon Cooper has really bad taste. I don't know why he hates that show so much.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
He's like, it's derivative. I think part of that joke, I think when that was referenced, I remember the episode where that was first brought up, and I think it was like Babylon 5 versus Deep Space Nine, which was the Star Trek show that centered on a space station. That might have been a subtextual reference to some little behind-the-scenes rivalry between the two.
Oh,
or
okay.
Because Straczynski first pitched the concept to Paramount, the Star Trek studio then, in 1989. Eventually, Paramount turned it down. He eventually pitched it to Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers took it. That Warner Brothers Television was the studio behind Babylon 5. Both B5 and Star Trek Deep Space Nine came out at the same time.
Oh, so
And I want to say here, it aired, they aired like back-to-back on the same channel.
Damn.
And they're both very similar. And Straczynski, while he never sued, he had always questioned whether or not Paramount took his notes and were like, let's retroactively use this for a Star Trek show instead. And so there's been a lot of, it's a controversial thing. It's like, did Deep Space Nine rip off Babylon 5? And I love Deep Space Nine. I would say that's like also one of my favorite shows ever. And I would say that there's enough differences between the two shows, especially as they evolve, that they're kind of separate things. Like, why can't you have more than one space opera that's takes place on a space station? But I think that's what the Big Bang joke
was
deriving from.
Okay.
It's like, sense. You know, if you know, you know.
No.
Yeah, Babylon 5 is just absolutely incredible, way ahead of its time.
Obviously, if the storyline is still relevant for today's times.
Yes. And a lot of TV writers and producers probably should give Babylon 5 a look, and because there's a lot of valuable lessons that could be learned from that show in terms of how TV is produced, how you plan your storylines in advance, if that is what you want to do,
which you don't have to do.
I mean,
but look into it.
But if you pride yourself like, we got a plan, then maybe look to Babylon 5 and see, like, how do you make having a plan interesting? Because you can have a plan and, you know, it doesn't really matter in the viewing experience. But, you know, if you could do a show where if you know what's going to happen in season 3 and you can drop some hints of it in season 1 and then kind of plan your big reveals in a way that'll surprise you and catch you off guard and not just be like, yeah, we're going to answer all those questions in the big season finale. if you could be that clever, then I think you're doing the whole we got a plan right. Otherwise, don't even bother with the plan. Just write a good pilot and then hire a bunch of good writers and then figure it out that way. Yeah. Incredible, incredible television. I think it's on Amazon at time of recording. Hopefully it stays there for a while. Worth checking out. You can get past the...
You said Warner Brothers, wouldn't it be on HBO Max?
It was on HBO Max.
Oh, they took it off?
And then they took it off.
Damn it.
Although when they put it on HBO Max, that's when they gave like the live action... The stuff with actors, I don't know if they did this with the computer graphics, but they kind of gave it like a 1080p facelift, which is nice. So it was like, okay, it doesn't look standard def anymore. It doesn't look like crap. It looks passable. So, because you know, which you can do that if you shot on film. I think that remaster has carried over into like you can watch that version on Amazon now.
Babylon 5 already.
Mm-hmm.
There are things in the universe billions of years older than either of our races. They are vast, timeless. And if they are aware of us at all, it is as little more than ants. And we have as much chance of communicating with them as an ant has with us.
We know. We've tried.
And we've learned that we can either stay out from underfoot or be stepped on. They are a mystery. And I am both terrified and reassured to know that there are still wonders in the universe that we have not yet explained everything.
What's your fuck it, dude?
Travis, do you like killing zombies?
I've only ever done it in the Last of Us games, I will admit. That's my only experience of killing zombies.
Something close to a zombie, but not like legit undead, like...
Not like a classic dead corpse rising kind of thing.
I bring up zombies because, for my fuck it, it's a Resident Evil game. Have you ever played a Resident Evil game?
I don't think I have. I'm trying to remember because I've been to arcade games that have like that the arcade version of Resident Evil 3 Nemesis or something.
No, it's Code Veronica. That's the ones that most.
Okay, I'm trying to remember if I ever played any of those.
House of the Dead's a different one.
Yeah, I also might be confused with House of the Dead.
So I spring up Resident Evil 8. Resident Evil because I'm talking about Resident Evil 8. That's the one I want to talk about.
That's the one with the super tall, big booby vampire that chases you around the mansion.
Yeah,
right?
She's like 10 foot, I believe someone said, and she's got a nice chest. So what's funny about it? Okay, so Resident Evil came out, in the 90s. You start off in a mansion with zombies.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go into the city of, you know, Raccoon City with zombies.
That's in 2.
Liquors, more dogs, and then plant zombies. And then the game just gets interesting because you diverge from, like, the undead, you know, the zombies, reanimated corpses and stuff, really quickly because in Resident Evil 4, it's all about parasites and hive minds and religious cults.
Yeah.
And then Resident Evil 7, which is the first first
we'll
person.
We'll skip 5 and 6.
There's reasons why. Yeah, you literally fight a T-Rex in the 6th one, by the way.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it gets... By the way, Resident Evil's gone so off the rails that, thank God, Resident Evil 9 looks like it's going back to its roots.
Yeah.
But Resident Evil 7 and 8 involve the same character, Ethan Winters. And in 7, you go down into the bayou for like a Chainsaw Massacre type thing. It's first person. And it involves a goo, almost.
Mm-hmm.
But now in 8, you play Ethan Winters again. And what's a nice twist, and I'll give Resident Evil this, because basically everything after 4 is kind of sucked. 7 was just fun because it was first person. It was different.
And it was a lot more emphasis on horror.
Well,
like,
it was stealing from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And also, too, one of the bosses you have to kill in 7... The only way to kill her, her weak point, was her vagina. And you had to use a shotgun. So shotgun's close range. So you literally are going up and in this monster's vagina and buckshotting it. Yeah, it was a crazy boss fight. I'm not gonna be honest, because cockroaches were coming out of that shit. Yeah. But in 8, you play Ethan Winters again.
It's also known as Resident Evil Village.
Yes, but when you see the village, So, you're Ethan Winters, and you're with your girlfriend, now I believe wife, Mia, and you have a daughter, Rose. And what's nice about this, folks, by the way, because I'm saying Resident Evil 8, you don't need to play any of the other games for this game. Yeah. You can just play this cold, and you're fine. And what's nice is you can watch a recap of Resident Evil 7 to story prep you for 8. So you can go in cold. This is perfect. You don't have to play any other games, folks, or Travis, because I'm telling you about this. You can just literally go right into 8. So what's nice about 8, so basically your wife gets shot right at the beginning and your daughter gets kidnapped. So you go all the way into basically like Romania. And what's nice about this entry of Resident Evil, it's medieval. So there's no zombies. But you're fighting lycans, which are basically intelligent werewolves. You're fighting goblins and ghouls. You're fighting vampires. You fight a dragon. You're fighting a swamp monster. And then you're fighting like a dude who's like... It's almost like witchcraft, because he has like telekinetic powers, but only involving metal and electricity. So it's almost like Magneto-ish. But it's very medieval, because there's castles, it's a village, there's castles, there's fucking big-ass giants with axes, and there's beasts, and it's first-person, too. And it's a great first-person shooter. There's horror, because, like, you know, the majority of the enemies you're fighting are the lycans, and they have an AI component of, like, pack hunting. And they can carry crossbows, and they carry scythes and pickaxes and swords. So you're like, oh shit, they're like not just like clawing at me, they have like they're stabbing me and throwing like Molotov cocktails at me, and they have big ass bows, and they're like fucking shooting me through the chest. It's a fun first person romp, very action packed, great boss fights, like example the 10-foot tall chesty vampire lady. The swamp monster section's fun. There's the ventriloquist puppeteer section, which is, that's creepy. Oh, no. And also, too, what's nice is every boss fight, when you're fighting them and also going through their sections, and if you pick up the unlockable, like, reading material, there's a story to their fight, actually. Okay. Like, it's all sad and tragic. It's really cool. And then at the end, you fight the big bad witch. So, not to give too much more spoilers, but there's boss fights, but there's witchcraft. Vampires, like I said, the werewolves, you literally fight a dragon, so you know, the knight in shining armor, you know, the Sword of Excalibur moment, legit, there's like an Excalibur reference. It's really fun.
So, okay, when I first heard of Resident Evil, as I understand it, it was like an evil corporation.
Pharmaceutical.
Yeah, an evil pharmaceutical corporation either did like a chemical spill or something. And it turned people into zombie monsters. It was like, you know, pharmaceutical science gone horribly wrong. Boom, now you have zombies.
So you're right. Mm. But what it was is it wasn't an actual boom. They just figured out, hey, there's a way to make money. And it's called biochemical warfare.
Okay.
So Veroria Pharmaceutical Company, we can, under the radar, test other things like a pharmaceutical company, but it's war. So the thing is, so you're bringing that up. So by the way, so Resident Evil 8 has nothing to do with the Umbrella Corporation in the sense of the zombies. It's just straight up, you're in just a medieval world involving witchcraft.
So, yeah, and
but
that's...
The whole of the series involves the T-virus, the V-virus, the G-virus, the C-virus. I'm not joking, it's the whole alphabet. That's the bulk of the series.
The LGBT virus.
Literally. you make that joke, but literally. The bulk of the game involves you basically battling the aftermath of the Umbrella Corporation's basically playing God. In Resident Evil 8, it's just you on a hunt for your daughter, and you happen to get into more an ancient part of the world, which Europe, and it involves vampires, lycans, witches, dragons. So that's the difference. It's still great because it's just great first-person shooting mechanics and fun. You can go hunting legitimately on the side with side quests. Yeah. You have a money system to like craft and sell and build with a character called the Duke, which is a reference to the merchant from Resident Evil 4. They're actually buddies. And you can buy guns, trade guns, sell jewelry, find crystals, and craft your weapons, and yeah.
So, while there's, like, you know, all this, like, bio-warfare, you know, science stuff that was kind of the origin of the monsters in Resident Evil to begin with, has it just finally crossed over into full supernatural territory?
Yes.
Okay.
That happened with Resident Evil 4 because it involved a parasitic hive mind, but the powers that this parasite gave you was like, that's some supernatural shit.
Okay.
And then we just got into then goo because we're in the bayou.
Is it like basically, has it kind of turned into like a loose... Like horror anthology?
It's, so all of them are all survival horror, which basically you have to... Item management, not as much ammo. You got to decide what to shoot with what enemy and what not to. How to craft, what to craft. Space inventory, and then when to heal and not. So that's all... Every single one is survival horror.
Yeah.
It's just gotten loose in the sense of what the enemy types were. For example, 6 was just all-out freaking Gears of War. Like, you're just praying and spraying. Like,
yeah.
There's no, like, shit, I only have this many shells on my shotgun. Go into the sniper rifle! No, it's like, I have, you know, 300 rounds on my freaking AR-15, and I have my squad with AI companions, and we're just literally going through China just fucking killing everyone.
Lame.
So that's what 6 was. 5 was a co-op, like, almost arcade style, you could tell with like the way it was. It wasn't bad, but it got crazy with the whole rock punching. That's where the rock punching came in, by the way. You know, punching a rock with your boulder with your fist.
Oh,
that's Resident Evil 5. 4, I think, is the best of all the Resident Evil games, but that had legit survival horror. You're on your fucking own mechanics. That was great.
Okay.
The ones beforehand, like Nemesis, Code Veronica, Resident Evil 2, and Resident Evil, that was the old school fixed camera angle survival horror. So those are good games. The remasters for 2 and 3 are amazing. Not the remake like they did for 1, but I'm talking the remaster for 2 and 3. Those are super like awesome. Like, play those two. The remasters got like, oh, you want horror? Here's your horror. You got a flashlight in one hand, the shotgun in the other, and when you pump your shotgun, it gets dark. But 8, so specifically talking about 8, I think you'd like it because of the medieval quality to it, the supernaturalness, and it's like some cool fantasy horror. And I've never seen werewolves. Like, okay, the werewolves, like, from, it's almost like Underworld, where there's intelligence, pack hunting, like, strategical planning. That's what these lycans are doing. Like, they surround you. Like, there'll be some shooting for you from afar with a crossbow while others come in with a shield and a scythe to, like, mess with you, and others are throwing Molotov cocktails.
It's like the raptors in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, it's really... And they swarm you.
Oh, my God.
They swarm you. There's 2 to 3 sections where you're like, you need to move.
Yeah.
Like, you're the Doom guy. Like, you're the Doom Slayer, and you need that shotgun quick.
Yeah.
So it's worth it. I think you should play it. It's cheap now, $19.99 for the complete whole, like, Game of the Year edition with the DLCs and all the other. And what's funny, the DLC offers the ability to go third person or third person. First person and third. The DLC, yeah.
Oh.
So the Game of the Year edition has the whole base game, the DLC, which I won't spoil what it is because that's the point of the game. some other cosmetics and fun stuff, obviously, like guns and outfits. But then you can do first person or third person. You can switch back and forth.
Wow.
And it's just for Resident Evil 8. I don't think Resident Evil 7 Biohazard has it. But 8's a fun, a good, I'd say, 25-30 hour game, just so you can enjoy the world. It's snowing, so you're walking through the snow. You can go off to hunt or off to treasure hunt. You can also backtrack through the village to obviously get more items and, like, jewelry and, like...
Is it like a... How is it like kind of open world sandbox?
Yeah,
it's not like as big as like Red Dead or anything like that.
No, it's not like open world Red Dead. It's more like open world, like you have a hub, but it's a big linear hub. Like you're backtracking in a sense, like how the Metroid games you're backtracking a lot.
Okay,
but in this one, like the village is a nice size village for a game.
Kind of reminds
me. It feels like an actual village.
Okay. So kind of like the first Arkham game, where it's just the asylum.
You know what? Think of Arkham City. That kind of. Like, it's open world.
Oh, okay. That big.
Well,
okay.
In the sense where it's open world, but you know Arkham City is like, there's a limit. Like, you can't go...
It's open
world, but there's a limit.
Not exactly as big as GTA, but you're still roaming around.
You can roam around. So it's like that, where it's more like a city, where you... are roaming around and you're obviously backtracking to certain sections, like, oh, there's the refinery, there's Penguin's Lounge, and then the Catwoman meet up. Mm-hmm. It's like that. Not as big as City was, because remember, City had the height, not the
yes, yeah.
But Resident Evil Village does have, you are walking a bit.
Yeah.
From point A to point B for certain things.
Okay.
Guns are simple, you know. As every Resident Evil game, you got the shotgun, you got a few pistols, you got a few of the Magnum and the revolvers that have to do the heavy damage, you got a sniper rifle, a couple machine guns, and then you got your grenades, your mines, and then you craft how much you want to go there, because the gunpowder mechanic, which has been a big... The gunpowder has been a big thing since they've remade Resident Evil... Well, actually, since I would say it was... It's Biohazard, and then Resident Evil 2, the remake for 2, 3, and then Village are all about, like, oh... And then Resident Evil 4 remake. It's like gunpowder, where it's like, yeah, you can find ammo off dead people or breaking crates, but then you'll find certain gunpowders. It's like, well, if I can mix gunpowder A and A, I get pistol ammo. But if I do A and B, I get shotgun ammo. But if I do B and B, I get grenade launchers. I think it's fun. It's cheap. $19.99.
Okay.
Fun to the point. In your face action, because it's first person. It's gory. Mm-hmm. There's a cool moment, and not to spoil it, you can play two characters in the game. And when you play your second character, that's where more of the truth of this village comes out. And there's a big, I'm talking a huge, basically Spec Ops the Line moment where you go, oh, fuck. That's what's been happening this whole time? Oh, no, yeah. When you play there's two characters you get to play. And when you get to play the second character for a quick bit, there's a big moment of like, oh. Okay, this game got, like, really heavy.
Was I the bad guy the whole time?
more of like you had to do it and you felt bad because you're not the bad guy, but what you had to do makes you go like this. Dear God. Dear God. This person's evil. I must put this person down. You made me do this. Yeah, I'll say this. There's a quote-unquote cleansing level.
Oh.
But you realize what you cleansed in the end. But there's no choice. You had to. But you realize you're like, oh. Oh, my God. They were this the whole time? Oh, you know what it is? Mm-hmm. It's a little kind of like that one Star Trek episode where the crew was helping out those miners, but you realize they're on that one animal's breeding territory.
Are we talking about the one with the Gorn? From the original series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the big giant lizard fight. Yeah.
No, not that one. No, the big, like, blob of a monster through the mines.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like...
Devil in the Dark.
So, yeah, there's a Devil in the Dark moment with one little segment of the game, and it's great because you start that... Because, okay, like I said, survival horror, you don't really always have a lot of ammo. Towards the end of the game, you have more powerful guns with a little bit more ammo. But there's a moment where you have, like, oh... I got 400 rounds. Awesome. And then at the end of the section, when you realize more of the story of this village, you're like, oh, that's okay. Well, I did use all 400 rounds. Okay, moving on. Try not to think about this moment.
One of my favorite tropes in like in video games, especially linear video games, where you come across an area and there's a lot of ammo. Last of Us is especially bad about this, where it's like there's a lot of ammo and resources to help you out, and you go, why do I need this? Why do I need all of this?
Why do I need an orbital strike?
That and the when the music suddenly changes, and either the music stops or the music comes in all of a sudden, and those two tropes like give me the willies.
Yeah.
What's
great about Resident Evil 8 is that there's a big spec up the lines moment, and you're just like, fuck, I can't wait to kill this person now. I'm going to kill this bitch.
Yeah.
It was great. So it's a good game. Very linear with a little open world. Fun world building. Great. The villains are great. The boss fights are awesome. All the boss fights are different, too. So that's the best part. And no boss fight's the same. They're very in your face. It's great. There's a bit of a callback to the first Resident Evil game, because you go through a big castle-like mansion for a bit where you're being kind of hunted down from the tyrant, kind of like in Resident Evil 2 and 3 with the nemesis. So it's good. Mm-hmm. It's fun. I think it's really worth it. You should play it. You're going to enjoy it, and the monsters creep up behind you, so you can't see because third person, so you got to turn around first person a lot.
Oh.
You got to look over your shoulder a lot. It's awesome. Everyone's quiet. Everyone's like coming at you. You get surrounded. The whole thing is the enemies are trying to surround you a lot.
Oh my god!
It's well done. It's well done. It's a fun game.
Is that like a Resident Evil staple where there's like from since the beginning where there's like a big bad guy that like an unkillable bad guy that is stalking you
until you get to the end kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yes. So every except for. 4, 5, and 6.
Okay.
In 4, you just deal with one guy for a couple of cutscenes, but he's not hunting you down. Like, you know what I mean? You just deal with him in a cutscene.
Yeah.
But in 1, 2, and 3, like, okay, the first one, there was a tyrant that came towards the end. The second one was obviously Mr. X for the whole of it. And then the third one was the Nemesis.
Yeah.
This one, they bring it back for one of the bosses, where it's like, actually the boss and her daughters, which is a cool little thing. So there's 4 tyrants in the castle section where they like you gotta like just keep an ear out or move and like go around. So it's cool, and it's fun because it plays with the concept of vampires, dragons, werewolves, you know, the swamp monster and the lake, like almost like Loch Ness monster type thing. It's a different take on these medieval creatures that we've known for so many years. So that's what's nice. Oh, and the fun part is there's a character, Heisenberg. And, okay, so you know Resident Evil's Capcom. And Capcom's a Japanese company.
Yeah.
There's a character, Heisenberg. And it's like the way he talks, it's like, do Japanese people think this is how American people talk?
Oh, they didn't translate it properly?
No. It's just like whoever they got as the American voice actor is kind of like a...
That accent's not real.
It's not an American accent, but it's almost like, I feel like you're making fun of us, but I also like how this guy is talking.
It's like when you hear British people try to talk with an American accent and they say their R's kind of like this. They do their R's,
it's worse.
Very weird.
It's worse. It's not the alphabet. It's delivery. It's delivery. It's not the way
emphasis on the wrong syllables.
It's almost it's like it's making fun of Keanu Reeves' American accent.
Ah,
it's like that. It's like, I can't believe you thought this idea was stupid and god damn it, like, just shut up and listen to me.
It sounds like someone doing a bad William Shatner.
Yes, it is. Because all the other villains talk like normal. Like either high-end, sophisticated, or, oh, yeah, going to die. Now, this one's all like, I can't believe you fall into my trap. I'm going to skin you alive.
Quit competing with me, Decker.
So, Resident Evil 8, that's my fuck it. You should play it, Travis. Everyone also listening should play it. Best part is, you don't need to know anything about the Resident Evil franchise. You just go in cold.
I got that impression from the promos that, like, okay, I don't have to play the other games. Still, just every gameplay footage I see just gives me the just scares the bejeevas out
of
me.
Oh no, it's in your face.
Like the footage, like the stuff I saw from like Resident Evil 7. I saw one video. It's from a YouTube channel called Slippy Slides. It's one of those like, how does the game work when you like no clip it?
Oh
when
you, yeah, like, go outside. Yeah.
And so what he was doing was he was trying to, who's the tyrant in 7? He's like the dad.
It's the dad.
The killer dad.
It's the dad with the dad in the family.
Yeah,
because it's like, again, it's a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, so you're dealing with the dad of the family.
Yeah, so like the dad, it's like when the dad is chasing you around the house, and or looking for you around the house.
What's the dad doing when he's not in view? Yeah, I know. Yeah,
yeah.
It's creepy, huh?
And so like the point of the video was to try to determine what the pattern is, and the YouTuber concluded that there is no pattern.
Yeah.
Like there are certain actions you can do, no matter how, like, that could change his movement. But if you do nothing, it's like, it is random.
Yes.
What he does.
Oh god, the dad sucks.
And that scares the fuck out of me.
I think Resident Evil 7 is about 10 to 15 bucks, so it's worth it to buy. That one is spooky because one, the ammo is so much more scarcer because you're in a house, so it's kind of that realisticness. But it's literally you're in the backwoods hillbilly country. And like they really emphasize the disgusting and like unpredictableness. The other bosses are very linear, like you just find them. Mm-hmm. The dad is stalking the shit out of you.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do. And he's just laughing and having fun with you. And the thing is about the dad, it's not like automatic, I'm trying to kill you. No, like a couple times he'll just pick you up and throw you. Like he's a cat playing with a toy.
Yeah, like the he'll catch you off guard.
Yeah, sometimes he's not specifically trying to kill you in like with his actions. He's trying to fuck with you. And you fight the dad like two times. Two to three times. And
yeah, there's like a bunch of false deaths with the dad.
Dude, he's the fucking, every time it's like, Jesus. It's a fun one. So Resident Evil 8, play it. You don't need to know anything about the Resident Evil franchise. It's fun. It's if you like medieval stuff too, like the Excalibur moment I love so much. I thought that was cool. I'm like, it's a different take on Excalibur. I liked it. And it's a legit different take on Excalibur.
Nice.
It's awesome. When you find your Excalibur, you're like this. Okay, this is cool. I didn't expect this.
Yeah.
And the dragon fight is awesome. And you're also killing huge-ass bats. It's great. So play it. It's fun. That's my fuck it.
You excited for 9?
Yes, I'm excited for 9. I'm glad you brought it up because 9
is... What's it called?
It's not Requiem, is it?
Oh, it could be.
I think it's Requiem, and I'm just
Resident
thinking...
No, not Alien. That's a great TV show, though. I brain farted there.
As Travis looks it up, Resident Evil 9 is coming out.
No, it is Requiem.
Oh, it is Requiem?
Yeah.
Okay, so Resident Evil 9 comes out next year, and I'm super excited about it because, one, irregardless of what my freaking fan fantasy brain is going through right now, you're obviously, it's showing you going back to Raccoon City post-nuke. Because in the second one, it ends with it getting nuked. And also in the movie, Resident Evil Retribution, whatever the Mila Jovovich one's called.
Which one? There's a bunch of them.
Well, no, the second one. It's like Resident Evil 2.
Oh, like Apocalypse?
Apocalypse, that's it, sorry.
Yeah.
Resident Evil Apocalypse ends like Resident Evil 2, the game does, where Raccoon City gets nuked. And what's cool about 9 is it's hinting that you're going back to Raccoon City post-bomb. And you, from what it's showing, it's not just the police station you're visiting, it's the whole fucking city. Because in Resident Evil 3, you're going through the city more, in 3. So I'm excited about that, because then that means we're dealing... The developers have said for the game, we're going back to zombies. So we're going to be fighting zombies finally again after almost, 10 fucking plus years. We're fighting zombies. Not parasites, not hive minds, not goo.
Not supernatural creatures.
We're going literally back to, like, undead zombies. So I'm down. From what I told is the character it looks like you're playing is a character that was introduced in the Revelations game. There's Revelations 1 and 2.
Mm.
And she's the daughter of... the one character who, like, I guess died in, I think, the second one. And so the daughter's basically taking on the mom's mantle of a story and, like, journalism, trying to crack. Because Umbrella's evil. And just Umbrella's just getting away with stuff, but it's pure evil. It's like fucking... It's like Halliburton. It just won't go away.
Yeah.
But anyway...
Amazon?
From what I could tell from what they showed in the trailer, for sure going back to Raccoon City, but there's a hotel that you're going to be playing in. And it looks like, once again, also, too, this is going to be first person. And what I'm getting from and what I'm hoping is that the hotel is a big, it's its own open world. So kind of like Luigi's Mansion 3,
okay,
where you are, there may be like a little hub section, like the lobby, yeah, but you literally get to travel in real time, no loading screens or anything, up the hotel, down the basement. That's what I'm hoping as a fan of just gameplay and hoping the open world. I'm hoping you get to literally like scale this entire hotel up and down. And then when you have a second map, you're going to Raccoon City and as well as the police station. So
all the while there's some, you know, boss, unkillable boss stalking.
I think it'll be for the hotel.
Probably
that's the hotel. My guess, because the claustrophobicness. Also, too, Outlast was in a hotel, the first Outlast game. So there was that. That's what I'm guessing. But if you do Raccoon City, that'd be kind of cool to deal with a radioactive zombie that you technically couldn't kill. So you could have two tyrants. That's what they're called. The unkillable boss is a tyrant. You might be able to play multiple characters. There's rumors that not just this girl, who's the daughter of a one character from Resident Evil Revelations, Leon, Claire, and Chris might come back. Big name characters that, you know, the fanboys jizz over. Yeah, everyone loves Leon and Chris. Chris is the one who punched the boulder. Claire is his younger sister. She's cute. I forget the girl's name in Resident Evil 3. Jill Valentine. There you go. You might be able to play as Jill. I hope so, because I think they butchered her in 5. Stupid shit. And apparently Albert Wesker is going to return. The not the big bag baddie, but like the one who's like behind the scenes. So, yeah, Resident Evil 8, play it. Resident Evil 9 is coming up. No connection probably to Resident Evil 8 except for the Chris part, because he's everywhere now. He's more Black Ops-y. Enjoy it. Have fun. It's freaky. It's in your face. There's a dungeon section in 8, which I know will freak you the fuck out, because they come out of nowhere, and you only got a tiny flashlight, and you have to literally turn the flashlight to get to see.
Yeah.
there's waist-deep water.
Oh, that
so stuff comes.
That
yeah.
fills me with stress.
So have fun. I think you should play it. You'd have a lot of fun. Can't pray and spray in this one. You got to conserve ammo.
I say that's cool, Tom, and then I'm going to go home and play the PS5 Spider-Man games. Is there a sponsor?
Yes. Our sponsor is Park Benches. Because they're nice and they're fun, and the city needs to fund it more to clean them more. And that's all cities. Yeah. All cities need to fund their parks more.
Yeah.
So they can have cleaner night. Because I'm looking at the park bench we're sitting at, and like,
if you can find one in the shade, good for you.
But like, no, look at the fucking bench table we're sitting at. Like, paint it, goddammit. Just paint it.
Yeah, I know. There's like weird burnt parts. And
it doesn't even look like rust. It looks like it's fucking burnt.
I'm like, did somebody...
And look at all the spider webs and stuff. Just get a leaf blower and just like...
Yeah.
Our sponsor is basically fund your parks better, damn it. Cities in anywhere America. Be more like Sweden.
And don't put weird dividers in them that are just there to deter homeless people from sleeping on them, because that makes the benches suck.
Yeah, because to sit on and enjoy ourselves.
Frankly, I don't want you to tell me where on the bench I want to sit on.
I'll sit wherever the fuck I want.
Yeah. And you know what? Sometimes... you know, maybe I'm not feeling well. Maybe I do want to lie on something, and I don't want to lie with the bugs and the grass. That doesn't mean I'm homeless. It just means I ate some bad food that day, and I'm walking in the
or
park to get some...
Or ate too much food.
Yeah, it could be that, too, you know? And I'm just getting some fresh air, you know?
Or like what we used to be able to do, drink at the park.
And if the price is that a smelly person who sadly does not have a roof over their head gets to sleep on the bench every so often, so be it. You know, that's the price of a better bench. I'll pay that price. Hey, everybody gets to enjoy the bench. I'd rather everybody enjoy the bench than a few people enjoy the bench and don't get to enjoy the bench as much as they would have. Anti-homeless architecture is evil. Don't support it.
I like our fuck it's. It's been a while since we did that fuck it, and this has been fun.
Yeah.
See, I didn't spoil this time. I told you.
No, I was really happy that you didn't. I was glad.
Wasn't foaming at the mouth like last time.
I was glad I wasn't sitting in silence for a long time waiting for you to... No, I... this is great. This is wonderful. Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome. Here's a fun way to end it. You ask me one question, I'll ask you. So, Travis, What is a TV show you think needs more love? Without going too much into detail, just a TV show you think needs a little more love that everyone should get back into.
For whatever reason, I'm thinking of the show Mr. Robot.
Okay.
Starring Rami Malek. Very different from Babylon 5, but...
I only saw the first season. That was on USA, right?
That was on USA.
Yeah, I only saw the first season. Oh, first season and season 2, episode 1. That's all I got, and then I just kind of got behind.
You know, that was one of those, like... I can't believe a TV network put this on. I can't believe a Hollywood suit, looked at this and said, yeah, I feel comfortable putting this on TV to the masses. Because there was a lot of kind of like radical subtext
show. It was basically what Tyler Durden wanted to do.
Yes.
It was the aftermath of Project Mayhem.
Mr. Robot was essentially Fight Club with like a social network veneer. And in my opinion, it got to explore a lot of the ideas of Fight Club better than Fight Club did, but maybe just by virtue of being a television show and taking more time with it. That's a great show, and I feel like, I don't know, there was a big like viewer drop-off after the second season, and I liked how it ended, I liked how it concluded, but I just feel like people need to go back to it, people with more patience this time.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, that's my answer. What about you?
For video games, since I did
sure,
video games?
Yes.
I think a video game that everyone should pick up and play with earnest is the Wolfenstein franchise.
Mm.
Even like the old school ones and that weird 360 one, which was definitely more supernatural.
Because we kind of hate fascists right now and we want to do bad things to them.
Actually, it's not just that. First off, it's the specific Wolfenstein I'm talking about is obviously the one Bethesda did with... the more like it was for the PS4, like I forget what year it came out, but like Wolfenstein, the New Order, the Old Blood, and the New Colossus.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Young Bloods was shit, so I'm just talking about these four. Oh, sorry, these three.
Yeah.
It's really good because it's a good piece of alternative history. There's a book I really love, and I hope you read it one day. Everyone should read it. It's called Fatherland. And Fatherland is basically if the Nazis won. And like they fucking won one. So, this is like almost for me kind of getting a taste of that world because...
Like they invade the United States and occupy us. Wasn't there like another book called The Man in the High Castle that was about that?
That's about if the Axis of Powers won. This is specifically if the Nazis won.
Okay.
Like the Nazis basically killed the Japs too. they destroyed the Japanese
Empire.
Which
they probably would have wanted to do
in
if they had the chance.
So basically, though, in the Wolfenstein, this one specifically that Bethesda took over, which, again, New Colossus, Old Blood. Sorry. The New Order, the Old Blood, and the New Colossus. The Nazis ruled the world. They won World War II. And you play, obviously, the titular character, B.J. Blazkowicz. And what's cool about this is when you're playing through the game, the New Order takes place mostly in Europe. The Old Blood takes place during the height of World War II, and then the New Colossus is all in America. But what's really cool about it is you see the interesting like architecture if the Nazis really had it. Yeah. Like you see all the beautiful like the big pillars and like you know.
Oh, they would have brought that like Roman yeah, classicals
but,
thing
but,
back.
But think of Roman Empire skyscrapers.
Yeah. Like it's like that joke. I want to bring back the
Roman Empire, yo, bro.
Should I?
Yeah, say
should
it.
I explain that?
Yeah, explain the joke.
How did that come about? What were we talking about?
That was
about,
years
like,
ago. We were talking about this.
This what was the scenario? Like,
oh, Hitler.
A bunch of dictators
Hitler.
Were talking in a bar.
Yeah,
and they're talking about like their dictatorial visions of like taking over their respective countries, and then Hitler was like. You know, you guys are thinking too simple. I want to reinvent the Roman Empire. And I said bro in the end.
But basically, Hitler brings the Roman Empire back. But, like, it's skyscraper version.
Yeah.
And it's, first of all, beautiful, like, everything. Gameplay is graphic, obviously, dual-wielding shotguns and shit. But it's that cool, like, the Nazis have, like, big-ass robotic killer dogs with flamethrowers in their mouths. They have big mech suits. They have... It and you have the mech suits degrade when you're firing, like, it's a destructible environment. Like, all three games are phenomenal. I think it needs more attention again because, one, great gameplay, but also, two, the second one. So, the first one got all this love.
Yeah.
Second one became controversial because it came out in the year 2016, the second one. And apparently, killing Nazis got a little bit too little.
You had to look at the who was complaining about Wolfenstein getting too political.
Well, the thing, it's interesting because the first one, the New Order, fuck yeah, let's kill Nazis. Also, too, we're killing, quote unquote, futuristic Nazis. Well, yeah, fucking hey, yeah,
yeah.
And then also, too, you get to go to Venus in the second game, New Colossus. Oh, okay. No, so the first one, the New Order, you get to go to the moon, and it's awesome because the Nazis are on the moon. And the second one, the New Colossus, you go to Venus, and it's so cool. But the second one got all of a sudden controversial to be killing Nazis all of a sudden for some weird fucking reason. It was like, whoa, it's a little not palpable to be, putting an axe through a Nazi's skull. And it's like, when is it not? It's awesome to kill Nazis. Does everyone forget Inglourious Bastards?
We should, yeah. It should be widely acceptable. The most acceptable form of political violence
is to kill Nazis. It's great, and also cool. The second one's great because the Nazis are fully showing you now how they took over America. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment that made me laugh in that game where you're walking through Alabama. Alabama?
I think I know the clip that you're talking about.
You know who's in Alabama. The Klan is walking around in pride. And what made me laugh is a Nazi soldier. Keep in mind, this isn't a Nazi captain or general. This is a regular Nazi-like soldier. Yeah,
actually from Germany.
Who's patrolling the Alabama streets.
Yes.
He comes up to two Klan members almost like this. It's like a senior walking up to a couple of freshmen. Like, listen here, guys. I'm going to show you what it really means to be hateful. And it's like, so the Klan's a joke to the Nazis. Like, they get all nervous around the Nazi soldier. The Klansmen are like, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, isn't there, an implication that, in reality, the Nazis also think of these people as inferior?
Yeah, they think the Klan is, a bunch of idiots.
And it's like, we'll get to you guys eventually.
We're gonna educate you properly. You're not doing it right.
Educate.
Yeah, that's what made me laugh, is that the Nazis look down on the Klan. The second one, though, is way more psychological for BJ as a character story. And, it's cool. I think people should play those three specific Wolfenstein games right now. One, because of color commentary and where we're at in the world. But overall, it's interesting how the first one got all this love and, you're bringing back a classic. Yeah, Jimi Hendrix is in the fucking first one. I'm not joking with you. Fucking Jimi Hendrix. It's literally alternative history. They took it to heart. And then the second one, you're like, yeah, we're killing Nazis in Kentucky and in Alabama. We're going to New York. They got fucking bombed. It's like fail-safe aftermath. It's awesome. But all of a sudden, it got all this controversy and sales dropped. And it was like a little too, hey, maybe we shouldn't be killing people over political ideologies. I'm like, they're Nazis. You can kill these fuckers. It's very good. I hope they make a movie soon about the Wolfenstein movies. And not the older ones that we knew, where it got really supernatural and paranormal, of just these three with B.J. Blazkowicz, where it's alternative history. The Nazis won, and now you're just a resistance. You're not stopping the Nazis, you're hurting them.
I have an unfortunate feeling that we're going to see a lot less World War II movies the next couple of years.
You mean the next 4 years or so, or plus?
The next 4 years, because, I mean, if an interview with Kamala Harris can get a studio to cave to a lawsuit against the president.
Yeah. So
only for $16 million too. Wasn't even that much money.
I know, it was almost like just
Blumhouse makes movies that cost more than that.
It was almost like it's just a dick contest, was it?
It was just so Paramount can go through with a merger that they've been trying to get through the last couple of years. And the administration was blocking it. It was some quid pro quo shit, but still, just have a feeling we're not going to see a lot of American soldiers killing German troops in our screens for a while.
Which sucks, because those are the best type of... But who doesn't...
It's like the most,
It's the most fun.
It's like the best type of war movie. It you can get away with this.
It's the European theater.
Yeah.
Because the Pacific theater, it's just like, oh, this sucked. The European theater, you're like, this. No, this is great. This is Glorious Bastards, Band of Brothers, Saving Private Ryan, freaking Overlord, which is all the Nazi zombies.
I know this seemingly, we seemingly went off topic, but trust me, this stuff about fighting fascists ties in very well with Babylon 5, as I mentioned earlier. So I think we went full circle there.
Hey!
Hey!
No dictator, no invader can hold an imprisoned population by force of arms forever. There is no greater power in the universe than the need for freedom. Against that power, governments and tyrants and armies cannot stand. The Centauri learned this lesson once. We will teach it to them again. Though it take 1,000 years, we will be free.
All right, that's our fuck it, folks. Hope you had fun. We're going to try to do more fuck it's as time comes on because, well, hopefully the news doesn't get so time consuming.
Don't say that. Because it will.
I know it will.
It's going to get worse. It gets worse all the time.
We're still in the first year. You're still in the first year. That's the crazy part.
We've gotten through half a year
of bullshit.
It's that joke from 30 Rock where Liz Lemon tells Jack Donaghy, you know, what a week it's been. And then Jack says, it's only Wednesday.
It's only July, folks. Wait till the holidays.
Woo.
Someone's got to pick the apples for the apple pie and slaughter the turkeys. All right. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.